On Wednesday, Washington woke up to a new reality. A new Democratic majority in the House and a continued Republican majority in the Senate. But even with all this change, there's a familiar face taking center stage in Washington.
What is your level of confidence that you'll be the Speaker of the House?
Total.
100%?
100%, yeah.
Nancy Pelosi. That's her on CNN. The first woman Speaker of the House is positioning herself to regain the speakership, more than a decade after she first secured the job.
I accept this gavel in the spirit of partnership, not partisanship.
Tonight, I have the high privilege as the first president to begin the State of the Union message with these words, Madam Speaker.
During her previous tenure, Democrats passed the Affordable Care Act and legislation to stop a bleeding economy during the housing crisis. Even the president had nice things to say about her the other day.
I give her a lot of credit. She works very hard and she's worked long and hard. I give her a great deal of credit for what she's done and what she's accomplished.
But this time around, not everyone sold on another Speaker Pelosi. Almost two dozen Democrats have, at some point, said they won't support her as Speaker. Now, some of that reticence has to do with the fact that she's been a constant villain in Republican campaign ads.
Well, Democrat leader Nancy Pelosi and her liberal allies spent over $6 million
joining Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi supporting a national energy tax.
If McCall loses again, hello, Nancy.
So is Nancy Pelosi really the best person to take Democrats out of the wilderness and into 2020?
I didn't ask anybody for support because I was too busy winning an election.
This is Politics with Amy Walter from The Takeaway.
I think that this particular moment in time is not a time where you need on-the-job training. You need somebody who's been to the circus before.
That's Dr. John Lawrence, who was Nancy Pelosi's chief of staff from 2005 to 2013. He's currently visiting professor at the University of California Washington Center, and he's author of the new book, The Class of 74, Congress After Watergate and the Roots of Partisanship.
You need somebody who's going to step into the role of speaker, who knows how to manage the caucus, who knows how to listen to members and to address the diverse needs of people in the caucus. But most importantly, you're also going to need somebody who stands up for the institutional interests of the House of Representatives. And that's Nancy Pelosi. She has a proven record. Independent congressional observers call her the most successful speaker in the last 75 years. You have a large infusion of women coming into Congress. It's just inconceivable to me that Democrats would agree to unilateral disarmament and install as a speaker someone who has no experience in any of those crucial areas of legislative and political management.
And yet, there were a number of Democratic candidates, and there are current Democratic incumbents who've said, I absolutely cannot vote for Nancy Pelosi. So if she is as effective and as important as you laid out, why is she having trouble with a significant number of Democrats coming on board?
I think it's very simple. The Republican Party has spent millions, tens of millions of dollars over the last decade vilifying her. And the Democrats should not allow the Republican opposition to choose their leaders by vilifying an effective leader. And I think people should also understand, it's not as though if someone else were installed as the speaker, the Republican opposition would be benevolent towards them. Think of what they did to Barack Obama. You go after the political leadership. I understand the people who are running in marginal districts, and many of the people that we were elected on Tuesday are in marginal districts, could not stand up in the course of that kind of onslaught to the direct question. But I think now that they're going to be members of Congress, they're going to come into the institution, they're going to see how their personal best interest and the caucus's best interest and the Congress's best interests are served. I think they're going to take a second look at that decision and find a way to support Mrs. Pelosi.
Well, you actually just recently wrote a book about the class of members that came in, the so-called Watergate babies. They came in 1974, right after Richard Nixon left office. There are a bunch of folks, me included, who have compared this incoming class to that Watergate baby class. They're new to politics. They're very young. Many of them have run as reformers, outsiders. So tell me how those folks who are running, not only did they say, we can't vote for Nancy Pelosi, or we need new leadership. How do they come into this Congress and work with someone who is part of the establishment and has represented, for good or bad, the establishment in Washington for all these years?
I think that their frustration is not with an individual. It's with a system that is not responsive to the demands of the American people, whether that's on affordability of education or protecting health care, a whole litany of issues. And now that the Democrats are in the majority, they're going to have an opportunity to act on those. Whether or not the Republican majority Senate responds or whether or not the president vetoes, we'll have to see those developments as they occur, you know, one crisis at a time. But I think that the frustration here is not with an individual or with the leadership, as it was, for example, in 1974 that I wrote my book about. The problem there was that you had an infusion of young progressive people, and what they confronted were caucus chairmen and leaders, particularly committee chairmen, who refused to allow legislation to proceed, even if it had a majority support in the Democratic caucus. You're not going to have that problem this time. The leadership, the committee chairmen, are very interested in moving the kind of legislation that these freshmen said they were going to support when they ran for office. And I think that the first step for them is going to be get on the committees that they want to be on in order to serve their constituents and in order to advance the policies on which they ran. And you're going to find, certainly Mrs. Pelosi, she is extremely skillful at putting people into committee slots where they can be most effective.
So realistically, what can a speaker do when the Senate is controlled by Republicans and the White House obviously controlled by Republicans? What can he really do?
Well, there are two major areas of responsibility. One is oversight, and that is a crucial component of the congressional responsibility. I think you'll be seeing now a lot more use of oversight. I don't mean irresponsible oversight. I don't think people are going to be rushing to issue subpoenas, but there will be a calling to account, and that is proper and responsible. I think the other part is obviously legislation.
You don't think, though, that Democrats are going to use the subpoena power for more political purposes? That's certainly the line that the president, Republicans have been using, that they're going to be using their subpoena power to personally go after the president, whether it's getting his tax records or going after his business dealings. You think they're going to stay focused just on the oversight of the government itself?
Well, I think the administration, the president, has gotten very used to nobody asking them very tough questions. I don't think anybody cares about Donald Trump's tax returns from the standpoint of his payment of taxes. I think they care about whether or not he's manipulating his policy decisions in order to benefit himself personally or financially. If necessary, I think they will use subpoenas, of course, because the Congress is a co-equal branch of government. It has every right in the world to ask those questions. And hopefully the executive branch, the president and other cabinet officials who will be called down to testify for the first time to account for their decisions will comply, and subpoenas aren't necessary. Remember, subpoenas are not the first line of defense. Subpoenas are used when people refuse to cooperate with the constitutional requirement that they respond to congressional inquiries.
John, you made the case for why Leader Pelosi should be the speaker, but does she have the votes to get to be speaker?
Mrs. Pelosi is the best vote counter I've ever seen in almost 40 years of working for the Congress. I think that she will spend whatever time is necessary talking to both current members and incoming members. She will explain her case, make her case. I have no doubt whatsoever that when the tally is taken, that she will comfortably be elected speaker by the Democratic caucus.
John Lawrence, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Amy.
John Lawrence served as chief of staff for Nancy Pelosi from 2005 to 2013.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo. Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.